welcome to Outsources. This evening we are pleased to present to you Dr. Stephen C. Lee. Stephen is a licensed psychologist who is assistant director at the Metropolitan State University of Denver's Counseling Center. He's also an expert in LGBTQ issues as well as American Indian issues. One of the things I'd like to do first before we get into kind of all kinds of just issues we could talk about is tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I have been here at the Counseling Center at Metro for about 12 years now, and serving in multiple capacities, but I have had a couple of different lives as a psychologist. I've worked for an American Indian agency that was here in town in the past, that was a drug and alcohol and mental health treatment facility, and I got to work up at UNC in Greeley for a couple of years as well. Let's see. Things about myself. It's one of the oddest questions that a psychologist ever gets. I am Native myself. We are enrolled members of the Chickasaw Nation in Oklahoma, but have Choctaw ancestry as well. And I take part in as many Native things as I can, including powwows in this area. It's a really rich area for American Indian folk, and all of the, or is almost all of the national centers for Native issues, for example, Council of Energy Resource Tribes, Native American Rights Fund, that sort of thing, all have their offices, their national offices here in this area, which is really nice.
So there's a lot of resources here. A
lot of resources for Natives here, yeah. Let's see, I've been fortunate enough in the past to have been on a couple of boards. I was on the City and County of Denver's, the Mayor's Denver Indian Commission, and I also got to serve on the Denver Indian Family Resource Center's board for some years. That's one community that I'm really connected to that I really try to give back a lot to.
So what do you do for fun?
Definitely going to powwows when I can. I take part in part of the powwows, the gourd dance, which is a men's honoring dance. Usually that takes, it's a more southern oriented dance that takes place before a regular powwow begins. So I make sure that I connect with all of those events up and down the Front Range here. What else do I do?
And do you still dance?
Yes. Yeah, I was up in Fort Collins for a two-day powwow just a couple weekends ago, and the, upcoming on May 7th, I think, is DU's student powwow. They'll be doing an hour of gourd dancing before the regular powwow starts, so. I run. I work at Whitewater Kayaking. Fortunate to have some family in Salida, which is the headwaters of the Arkansas. Read, hang out with cats,
You have cats?
I have two cats, yes. It's important to talk about pets, no matter what they are, yeah, because they keep us healthy and calm, and, yeah.
Absolutely, and in these times, anything like that can help.
Absolutely, and these times are, we're in times that I can't even begin to describe the times that we're in. And we've seen a huge shift, post-election and post-inauguration.
In what way?
Well, I keep saying that all of last year, 2016, was setting the stage for how bad this year has gotten, because all we have seen are our national leaders and all the tiers of people lower modeling a certain type of behavior, and that is to tell you who to blame, or what's wrong with the world, what to be afraid of, and who to blame for it. And we've seen a lot of arguing and a lot of dissemination, and then, especially post-inauguration, with any disenfranchised community, whether it's our Latino community, anyone of color, immigrant community, LGBTQ community, women, you just saw sadness, disbelief, shock. And you saw people scrambling to try to find some mental grounding for the experience, realizing that, you know, our leadership has verbally accosted, demeaned, thrown aside all of these communities and is continuing to do so. I think the university tried to respond very quickly, especially for the Latino community and the immigrant community, by holding some open forums, panels, getting immigration lawyers to come and that sort of thing. But I think the student population that we see here at the Counseling Center, it is a topic almost in every session about some concern or some lingering issue. Some experience they've had on campus, a comment they've overheard. Folk are experiencing, you know, more what used to be down at the level of microabrasions, microaggressions, are now coming back to macro level.
Can you explain that?
Okay, yeah. So, you know, overt racism, I think we all have a sense of that and bigotry. For a while, after the politically correct movement back in, the 80s or so into the 90s, I'm dating myself a little bit, we saw a lot of that oppression, privilege, racism go to lower and lower levels. So it's not as obvious and overt, but it's, you know, it's in a look, a gesture, you know, getting on an elevator and seeing people, you know, tighten their hand on their purse or their bag or whatever they've got, subtle ways of being demeaning towards somebody else. And, you know, we're hearing both from professors and from students and staff experiences of being called out or being misidentified as belonging to, say, you know, Middle Eastern descent or something like that, and hearing horrible comments. Yeah.
What do you see is effective and helpful to students, as well as being aware of the broader Native community? And that's a giant, these are giant questions now, as well as the queer community.
But that's the word in itself is community. You know, by and large with the Native community and with a lot of other communities around the world, world communities, a sense of collective, a sense of togetherness, a sense of identity, not just of as an independent self who needs to push through something, but as branching out to whether it's extended family, friends, whatever that web is, that network is. And it's something that I think a lot of folk in the U.S. struggle with, because that is not how we're typically raised. As an independent person, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, that sort of thing.
And well, at least that's the narrative that we're fed.
Yes, we're fed. Yeah, force-fed, yes. And I think that the strength that we're seeing is how each of these groups is pulling together, sharing their stories, sharing their fears, their sense of concern, which, you know, once you commiserate for a while with close people, then it starts turning into more strength-based talk, I think, by and large. And so I do see, and even in Oklahoma, you know, you do hear about communities pulling together more, and especially Native communities, but LGBTQ community, immigrant community, people pulling together, listening to each other, supporting each other in ways that, you know, a year ago they weren't necessarily.
So there's actually more ally work going on, more crossing identities.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, we all know that there's, even if we just talk about college students and LGBTQ people and Native people, that those you're crossing many identities all at once.
Yes. And thank you. Intersectionality is a huge thing. And I think this may be the year of intersectionality. I think people are so much more hyper aware of the multiple representations of themselves that are out there and how those are crossing in order to find sources of strength and stability within themselves and with others. And I think we see people more readily trying to find those intersections between themselves and other people to create that connectivity. Yeah.
Do you see that as a function of all the verbal and physical assaults that have been going on since the past year? I mean, a lot of this is not new. I mean, then, for example, the queer community has been attacked for a long time, and the Native community has been attacked since white people got here.
Yes, yeah. And, I mean, as we see with the, you know, the Standing Rock pipeline issue, which is, you know, still going on.
But not as much in the news anymore.
As much as in the news, as always. I think it's startling to all of us that public figures in public forums have been so outspoken. I don't know that we've heard, I mean, we've heard, you know, pieces from, I'm not going to go in and name a bunch of public, you know, public folk, mostly conservative, might I add, who, you know, tend to be more outspoken, more misogynistic, more against anyone of color. But I think it has been so startling to hear so many people speak so openly, so blatantly, and so rudely and meanly about people. It is a startling thing. You've heard about it from the 60s, maybe into the 70s a little bit. Things go underground, war times hit, and then you hear a little more rhetoric that's unsettling, but you know, everybody gets on the bandwagon. But now, there's just a sense, even within families, people have talked about how a family member, a sister, a brother, a parent, just is so rigid in that belief system that we are right, and you know, this man is our leader, and you know, oh, he didn't mean to say that thing about women or gays or you know, Mexicans. You know, that's just part of the platform, and it's not. I think most of these groups that we're talking about are so used to hearing that stuff that you know, there's that healthy paranoia aspect that we've always talked about in psychology and sociology, and you hear it and you still can't believe it, and you have to process it, but you know what you heard, and it can't be unheard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there is a lot of denial going on.
Yes.
In some quarters, apparently, of what did get said, and
yeah,
and that it has meaning. I mean, of course, psychologists tend to view, as linguists do,
yes,
words have tremendous meaning, and other people dismiss that as, no, let's just look at the actions.
Right, right. Oh, the intent was to say X, Y, and Z. Well, we've seen that, I think, in the sports community for a long time. Folk are doing horrible things, and then there's a nice retraction, and it's all good. We see this in, you know, leaders in the sports community as well, not to just vilify sports, but we see it in politics and big business and that sort of thing. And it's, yeah, we are in huge denial.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Beyond, you know, big leaders, kind of what kind of goes on, it's a microaggression everywhere, is trying to undo a joke or a little comment and say, well, you know, I don't mean anything by that.
Right.
When, well, there's a grain of truth that was well meant no matter
yes,
what.
Right.
That we know about, which makes it difficult.
Yeah.
How do you see people having got past all that to do more ally building at this point?
I think what always helps in a moment of crisis is feeling like you're able to actually do something other than just go to your safe place, your safe house, your own home, be with your safe people. And we have seen student groups and groups citywide and statewide and nationwide, well, and worldwide actually now, find their voice in a way that we haven't seen, I think, in a few decades, and actually pull together in public forums to protest. And I think that that helps people burn through some of that fear, because they feel like they are taking action, not just for themselves, but for others as well. And it is always nice to see a group of people who are thinking and feeling as you do, fighting for a cause that is just, that is meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think we're seeing people access services more, at least on campus here. We've seen, I think, a steep rise in people of color accessing therapy more than ever before, which I think is brilliant. Yeah.
A way of taking care of oneself.
Yeah,
but also an indicator of pain.
Definitely. Definitely an indicator of pain.
This is a hard question because obviously you can't represent the Native community, but if there were some thoughts about what folks who are in the queer community but not in the Native community that would be helpful in being a better ally to the Native community.
Almost to any disenfranchised community. I think one thing I'm consistently shocked by, and not a lot anymore shocks me, the willingness, and I don't know if it's the willingness or the naivete or the need to be connected, to belong to a majority community. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what it would be that allows folk to take a position in which they see one line of history, one line of thought, and do not look for or question or be or show interest in other communities, other people. Interesting example of this is Denver March Powwow occurs every year here in Denver. It's now the second largest gathering in the North American continent. Gathering of Nations in Albuquerque is the biggest these days, but happens about third week in March. And I don't often watch the news, but I was watching a little bit of news the night before, and they said, oh, interesting things to do in Denver this weekend, and they named off several things, not March Powwow. And it brings in thousands of people. Mm-hmm. Most powwows are pretty hard to find in this area anymore, even online. Mm-hmm. And word of mouth is huge. But, you know, I post flyers up and around, and people don't know about, don't have interest in, don't see a need to go, think it's about, you know, art and exhibition. And I think the LGBT community is seen the same way. Mm-hmm. There's a pride parade or there's a nightclub that gets bombed, but God forbid we even say it was a gay club. It took one provost-level person on campus, and it wasn't Metro. I'm not trying to diss Metro. To actually say, yeah, we're gathering and talking about this gay nightclub and how it affects the gay community, mm-hmm. or the LGBTQ community, which is startling to me. I think it's about safety, that people feel safer if they embed themselves in their small world. And I know that any of these groups, as a gay man, as a Native man, you know, I can very easily embed myself within that group and see frustration and animosity and danger and, you know, want to push back against society or a law or, you know, something going on. It's not to say that every, you know, queer person, every Native person, every Latino person is so wonderfully open-minded that they're walking the earth with their heart out and embracing. It makes it exceedingly difficult whenever the majority community is throwing such animosity, such hatred, such distrust around. And that actually is where the power lies, and that's what starts the divisiveness.
The thread you're throwing out is you're asking them to consider the possibility that the narrative, the story being spun out there, or the general whatever, might be missing some pieces, whether it's around the queer community or around the Native community or any marginalized group. Their voice isn't there. One of the professors up at CU has said, the victor gets to tell the story.
Yes.
And we've seen that throughout our history, that the history we got taught in school was the history of the victor.
Yes.
And rarely the history of any other group, with maybe just a little nod to the side here and there.
Right.
You're saying go investigate, learn. And then there are other opportunities for the non-history buffs to go participate, powwow. It is totally predictable. It is the third week of March every single year. It's a huge event. It goes on for days. It's not like you miss one evening and it's over.
Right.
And it's very welcoming to outsiders. There's a lot of ways to just be a little, almost a fly on the wall, and yet learn a lot.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Denver is such a unique place because we are the largest metropolis, the seven counties area here, in Colorado, obviously, but in all the surrounding states. We're literally bordered by states that, have a lot of open land, not a lot of people. And so we're a hub. We're a human trafficking hub, we're a drug hub, we are a gang hub, and a lot of American Indians come to this area from north and south, east and west. What's the estimate? Usually 25,000-30,000 natives in the area at any one time. It's a very rich culture, blend of cultures right now. But I think that we're also a nice hub for the LGBTQ community. Denver or Metro has seen an increase in LGBTQ folk making themselves visible. Our trans community is growing, which is lovely to see, and it is embraced by and large. We have a great student resource center, LGBTQ student resource center, that advocates daily for that community. And so, I think we're one of the safer campuses. I think a lot of our folk feel safer because of that office and because of the connection with that office.
I know we're almost out of time, and I'm wondering if there are a few other things you would love for our listeners to know or think about, leave them with, in all these intersecting identities and thoughts and issues.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that strikes me, that I walk around with. Humor is really important to me, so mostly in my head, I play with language. Because language is an odd thing. And I have become, I think, being a psychologist and doing therapy day after day, I am really aware of how we're talking to each other and how we talk about ourselves. A couple of years ago, I was doing a women's group, and in talking about what it's like to have a male as the group leader and that sort of thing, I realized I was saying "you guys" a lot. And I looked at them, these eight women, and I said, "I'm saying you guys. That's weird to me." And they said, "Oh no, we call ourselves you guys all the time, blah, blah, blah." And I said, "I don't want to do that anymore." And so I kind of reprised a nice Oklahoma y'all into my speech pattern over the past 2 years. And I think I can count on one hand the times that I have slipped and said "you guys," referring to people. But, I'm struck with the way that we use weight-related terminology in talking to each other about emotions, about situations. And we're often, talking with someone who is overweight, struggling with weight. how sight-related we are when we're talking with people with sight impairment, with you know, being deaf or hard of hearing. It's amazing to me how I think careless we are with language as we talk. And not that we need to go out and be all politically correct. You know, Bill Maher has a great point of view. I highly recommend him. But I do think that we can be more mindful and more gentle with each other in how we speak, especially with ourselves. I think that's where it has to start first. And that's, I'm really huge on that. All the folk that I work with, my colleagues, they hear that all the time. It's important. We've got to learn to be, in the new PC protocol that I've been using, is more patient and compassionate with ourselves first. And that will automatically then flow out to other people. So that's the big thing, I think. And really, I mean, even having in the way in the past taught multicultural psychology and that sort of thing, majority community folk out there, white folk, if you will, you know, in talking to college level students about their culture and ethnic background, I've always been stunned at how folk say, well, I'm American. I think we have, say, Irish ancestry or Italian ancestry, or we're from the Netherlands or whatever. And that's as far as it goes. We don't have culture. We don't have tradition. And every group, every state, every nation around the world has culture and tradition. And there's a lot that you probably don't realize that your family does. That are something they may build into a Thanksgiving or a Christmas or a Hanukkah or something. But I think to become increasingly aware of our own intersectionality, I think will make us more able to look to other people and find commonalities and really awesome differences that will really bring us together and transcend some of this other stuff going on. Yeah.
Thank you, Stephen.
No, you're welcome. Thank you for having me. And thanks for all your listeners tuning in out there.
It's a new day. Love is here to stay. And there's no room for hate. With two spirits, but one heart.
You've been listening to an interview with Dr. Stephen Lee, Native American psychologist in Denver. Now for a few upcoming events. This weekend, if you're youth from age 13 to 18, you might want to go to the Down the Rabbit Hole dance at the Lafayette YMCA. Check out boulder.org for information. Also on the 5th, Beethoven Unity Concert, which will benefit Out Boulder and is by the Boulder Chamber Orchestra at Mackey. On the 5th and the 6th, there is a Resist art exhibit, North Boulder. All those events I just mentioned, outboulder.org. And in Denver this weekend is Tyler's Suite. This is a 9-piece choral movement about a college student who was bullied and died by suicide. For more information, harmonychorale.org for tickets, and it'll be in Denver and in Broomfield. If you missed Vox Feminista earlier, May 20th at the Mercury Cafe. Tune in next week to Outsources at 6:30 p.m. right here at KGNU, and you can listen anytime after the fact through news.kgnu.org, along with more information and usually photos, or you can go to kgnu.org and look up the archives under Outsources. We'll be waiting for you next Monday night. This is your host, Karen Rayforth. Good evening.